Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The bathrooms are, if you go across the hall, kind of diagonally, they're up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We have Ashley and Jason. Okay, so I will read the first paragraph, which is on page 85 tonight. And then the panel will share for a few minutes on each on the reading. Page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Ashley, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
My sobriety date is June 30th, 2003, and my home group is Bayside 12-Step Study, and we meet on 10:30. Meet on Mondays at 10:30 in the morning, 10 to noon. We have an 8-minute break in the middle if you need to get up and wiggle your legs. So when I first came to AA, like the only prayer basically that I could say. I mean, I grew up with a very religious background. We went to Catholic church, but we were kind of like a Christmas and Easter type family. So my religious sort of experience didn't, I didn't feel like any religion was shoved down my throat, yet I felt like it was kind of put on the table enough for me. I could sort of take what I like and leave the rest. My parents weren't crazy fanatical, so I didn't have any negative emotions toward God or religion or prayer or meditation or anything like that. I just didn't feel very experienced with it, really. And so my prayer in the beginning was just very simple. Like somebody had said to me, when you wake up in the morning, get on your knees, which I was not accustomed to doing. The church I went to, you know, there's kneelers at a lot of churches. We did not have those at my church. So I did not have to kneel. I didn't know when to, you know, we stood up and down and all that like Catholics do. But they said, kneel in the morning and ask God to keep you sober. And then in the evening, kneel again and thank him for keeping you sober. And that's basically all I did in the beginning. Like other people said, you know, oh, say the Lord's Prayer. Oh, say the 11 step prayer, you know, St. Francis Prayer, you know, things like that. And I was just like I couldn't do anything. And when I got on my knees, I did feel really disingenuous. And because I didn't feel any connection. I didn't think that God was there listening to me. I just, you know, I did kind of still believe in God, but I didn't think he really wanted anything to do with me, and it just felt weird. It felt really weird, but I just kind of kept at it, and eventually as I had my experience in AA and came around, it definitely grew from there. And I still am not big on set prayers. I'm fine when we say them in meetings, but I'm more of like a just sort of free thinker with my prayers, just kind of random babbler, as you'll notice when I talk tonight. And then, you know, when we retire at night, honestly, by the time I'm done with my day, and this is part of me like praying to be honest to you guys, I'm dead. I get in bed and I pass out. My head hits a pillow and I'm done. However, I will say that I do this kind of, you know, spot check inventory throughout the day and, you know, and talking to my, you know, friends in recovery and go to meetings and things like that. And for me, fortunately, where I am in my program right now today, I get that feeling, that sort of God consciousness or that nervousness or that uncomfortable feeling when I know either I've done something wrong or something's unsettled or I haven't been totally honest or I've been rude to somebody. I don't like that feeling. Like I get either a feeling that God is saying, do something about it, or I just don't feel quite right or whatever. And I hate that feeling because I used to have that feeling all the time. And I think I was telling a girlfriend of mine recently, like that sort of elephant on my chest, a little lump in my throat. I thought that feeling was normal. I just thought everybody had that. I really didn't know. And it wasn't until I came in AA and I got some serenity and I got some cleaned out my closet and all that kind of stuff that I realized that kind of peace and serenity and calm and just, I feel okay. That is what probably, I don't know about normal people. That's a good way to feel. I don't know what most people probably do have the lump in their throat because we all walk around like anxious and crazy. But that, I think that kind of thinking about these questions and, you know, asking God, you know, what measures should be taken and all that and talking to, you know, good recovery people, that's what I do throughout the day. So again, end of the day is probably good, but for me, I don't do it that way. So sorry, I'll pass.
Hey everybody, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Jason.
My sobriety date is August 4th of 2013. And that was the end of about 30 years of drinking and taking drugs pretty much every day. And in the beginning, I was having fun, or I thought I was having fun, and I thought it was helping me because it helped me relax, it helped me feel comfortable. And then by the end, it wasn't helping me at all. But at that point, it was my way of living. I didn't really know how to live sober or comfortably. And it took me 8 years to get sober. And it was scary because there were times when I thought I never would get sober. There were times that I came into AA, I didn't really do anything. I just came in, I sat in the back, I was in trouble, I wanted to get out of trouble. And that didn't work because the problem I had was a spiritual sickness. It was being uncomfortable sober. And it's no solution to sit in a chair for a little while and not drink. The solution is to take the steps. It's to find a different way to live. So after a while of failing in AA and my life kept getting worse, I did try. I came in and I started to try and I listened and I started working the steps. But then what happened to me was I got sober for a while and my life got much better and I figured I got this. And I started backing away from AA once I had 6 months, once I had a year. And I wind up going back out because the problem wasn't stopping drinking. It was that I'm uncomfortable when I'm sober. And what I finally learned is that my sobriety depends on maintaining fit spiritual condition. It's not about a fix that I'm going to get here. It's about learning a different way to live and then staying there. And so now my fear is I don't want to go out. I want to stay here forever. I used to think I'd come in, maybe get a certificate, pass the test, and get out of here. And now I want to stay. And so when we get into step 11 and then the maintenance steps, we're talking about what do I need to do to stay here? And so we talk about the nightly review, and it feels a little bit like an inventory to me, but not really, because I'm not laying out the different columns. I'm not necessarily looking for my part or what part of me it affects. What I'm doing with the nightly review is checking on my spiritual fitness. I'm looking for those things that block me off from a connection with my higher power, which is my selfishness, my resentment, my fear. And so at a high level, I'm looking to see, you know, was I spiritually sick today? Or maybe how sick was I today? And then if I find that the same things come up over and over again, it does lead me towards an inventory. And so often when I do this, was I resentful today? Yes, I was resentful. I'm not sure I have many days when I'd say zero resentment, but some days I feel a lot of resentment. And I think about what I was resentful about. And if it's my boss today, and if I do this tomorrow, and it's my boss, and the day after it's my boss, I know that my spiritual fitness is not great. And now I know I have inventory I have to do. I have to actually get into inventory and start writing it down and work out this resentment. It's not really what I'm doing at night when I'm going to bed. What I'm figuring out is something's not quite right with me, and it's the same thing over and over again. There is resentment that I need to get current on, because in recovery, I did the inventory, I worked through the resentment, I got some relief, I feel peace, I don't have to drink, but I don't get to stay there unless I stay current on my inventory. And so this lets me know that I've fallen behind if I have a resentment that comes up over and over again. And it'll be, for me, it'll be the boss. You know, my boss today told me what to do, pissed me off. Tomorrow, my boss told me what to do, pissed me off, corrected me, didn't agree with me. But once I lay that out a couple days in a row, I know that what's going on is I need to do real inventory. And then one of the questions that's really humbling for me here is, you know, was I thinking of myself most of the time? And sometimes with my fellows, with my brothers that I talk about this with, we use a number to describe, like, what percent of the time was I thinking about myself? And I've never given myself less than, I don't know, an 80% of the time thinking about myself. Like, that would be a really good day. I'm practically levitating if I'm thinking about you all 20% of the time. And that's a good day. And that's not that often. There are plenty of days where I have to say, I thought about myself 90% of the time. And there are days when I thought of myself 99% of the time, or even 100. So the question is, did I think of myself most of the time? What I'm really afraid of is, at the end of the day, did I think of myself all of the time? And again, I know that I'm not maintaining my spiritual fitness if I'm not thinking about other people, if I'm not trying to help other people. And so this part of the step for me is helping me say, you know, I've had some recovery, I'm sober today, but I want to stay sober. Am I spiritually fit? It's obvious when I answer these questions if I'm not, and then I have to go back and do some more work. That's what I got.
Thank you. Okay, the second reading is on page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, It is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
Okay, so in the morning, now I still do my get on my knees and say my please keep me sober prayer, but after I had gone through the steps, kind of what I like to say the right way, which there's any right way, but I've got to be a little big book thumper, so I think there's a right way. But once I went through the steps out of the book, I had been told, you know, basically incorporate step 7 into your morning prayer and, you know, ask God to, you know, help you be useful to other people. So I sort of put that in my own words, and I say that in my prayer each morning. And I've shared this before. People who know me have heard me say it, but like when I think I'm in a fit spiritual condition, like Jason was talking about, I get kind of excited. Like I think, ooh, how is God gonna help me be helpful? How am I gonna, you know, what character defects aren't gonna rear their ugly heads today? Or which ones am I gonna handle better when they do pop up? That kind of thing. So I get kind of excited. And when I'm probably not as in touch spiritually, I'm just like, you know, honestly, it's saying the words, but I say them and I'm there and I'm doing the action. So, you know, that's something. But the whole thing about like facing indecision, like a lot of times honestly, I don't face indecision because I know the answer. I know what to do. I'm running the show. Like mine is like self will run riot. That's what I have to be careful on. So it's more like, I think I know it, but it's more like, I think I know what I need to do, God, but you help me. So my prayers are more like, guide me, help me, show me, you know, help me get out of the way of myself, help me relax and take it easy, that kind of thing. These are the little phrases that come to mind when I'm thinking, and I'm a financial advisor, and I mean, I'm okay, comfortable up here with you guys because you're my people, you know, but like sitting in front of people that I don't know that well, or I think they're going to think I don't know what I'm talking about, or they're going to challenge me, or I'm not going to know the right answer, or whatever. I get a lot of fear and anxiety, you know, I worry about the outcome, just whatever. If they don't call me back, I think they hate me, or, you know, like whatever. I just get like insecurity and craziness. And so what I've started doing, like somewhere along the line had told me, like, I kind of had the same type of issue when I was dating before I got married, you know, and somebody had said to me, say a prayer before you go on a date and ask, like, because my sponsor would say to me, where's God in this, you know, because I'm running the show, trying to fix my life and arrange things just how it's supposed to be. And so now before I have meetings, not all the time, but mostly, you know, when I'm feeling anxious or nervous about something or whatever, I ask God, like, be with me during this meeting, help me to be helpful to them. And that's a lot, like what I'm saying in the morning too, because I find when it's not necessarily indecision, but for me it's always anxiety and stress and nervousness and all that. In the mornings I, you know, kind of hit the ground running and I think like, oh my day, and I'm thinking about my plans for the day, my little plans and designs. And so I have to say, like, who can I help today? And that, like, when my office, they asked us to set goals for ourselves this year, and that was my goal. And I'm like, I know it's kind of hard to measure, but I want my goal to be helpful to people, reach out to my clients, go above and beyond, ask them what I can do. And I know that might sound cheesy, and it wasn't like a customer service like you hear businesses or banks will say or whatever. But for me, I was thinking more along the lines of AA, like, how can I be of service to this person? If I'm being service to these people, clearly I'm gonna do a good job for them from a business standpoint, and then clearly I have no anxiety to worry about. I know I'm doing the right thing. I know I'm doing God's will. Because it was always like me trying to find the easy way out, you know, skirt the truth, not learn enough, just kind of like not really be a master of my craft, you know, in anything, whether it be school, whether it be work, whether it be my sports or whatever. I tried just to do as little as I could to get by and kind of just seem like, you know, just as long as kind of the veneer looked nice, you know, then the inside was like crap, but nobody would know because everything was shiny and nice on the outside. So that's kind of what I struggle with, like, be real, let the insides match the outside, you know, just be totally honest. I don't know that answer, I'm sorry, but I can find it out for you. I mean, stuff like that, learning that that's okay to say, whether it be work or otherwise, or to a friend or sponsee, that was super freeing, because then I would worry, like, I'd give a wrong answer to sponsee, friend, family, client, and then that fear and anxiety and worry, and I'm gonna be found out, and I'm a fraud, and all this, and what did I say to them, that kind of thing. Like, if I just say, like, I'm just truthful, which I know sounds so crazy, you know, like, wow, that's so simple, you know? But so, yeah, so just the conscious contact, just kind of staying in touch. And when I do have anxiety rear up during the middle of the day, I often find myself, or when I'm angry and I want to lash out at somebody, I say the serenity prayer in my head, like while I'm biting my tongue. I just kind of repeat it. And I know I'm not probably being a very good listener to the person who's being maybe jerky to me, but I'm just like, God, grant me the serenity, you know, in my head. And so it keeps me from saying things that probably I would regret later. So anyway, pass to you, Marcus.
So at this point in the 11th step, for me, I've got the, it's telling me what to do at the beginning of the day, end of day, what to do in the middle of the day. Kind of in, it seems like it's in reverse order. I've done the nightly review first, but really at the end of the nightly review, it says, what could I do differently? What could I have done differently? That is basically going to be my plan for a good day the next day. And because it's always going to be, I could be more kind, I could be more honest, I could be more considerate, I could be more loving, I could be more helpful. When I think about my plan for the day, my initial interpretation is, all right, at 7:35 I'm going to do this, at 8:35 I'm going to do this, and detailed steps throughout the day. But really, when I have a good day, when I have a spiritual day, the plan is at a much higher level. It's really just, I want to be kind and honest today. I'd like to go to work and do a fair day's work for my employer so that I can support my family. I'd like to participate in recovery. I'd like to go to a meeting at the end of the day and maybe try to help somebody. If my plan is that simple, it's always a good day. And it's when my plan is detailed, I'm going to go to this meeting, I'm going to try to accomplish this, these are the errands. If I start the day out there, I'm not going to have a good day, because it's all about self. I have a lot of expectations and things that I want to have happen, when really a good day is a day when I'm sober, when I'm helpful, when I can feel good about myself at the end of the day. The hardest part for me in the beginning of the day is doing this, either because I forget or because I get compulsively obsessed with whatever crosses my mind at the moment that the eyelids pop open. And so you hear different metaphors. Sometimes people say the committee in my head was awake and ready for me, or there's a saying, sort of the vultures on the bedpost. When I wake up, I'm shooting into action. I do not want to pause and think about what are the spiritual principles to guide my day. I'm really, by the time I'm in the shower, I'm having a conversation with a bunch of other people, maybe some of you, maybe with people at work, maybe with a girl, maybe with my kids, my parents. And I'm off to the races. And so what I really need to work on is remembering to do this, because I want to control the outcome in life. In every situation, I know what I want to have happen. I look for that to happen. I try to control that happening. If it doesn't happen, I'm frustrated. So I need to try to, at the very beginning of the day, take that off the table and think about being kind and honest and considerate. And so one of the things I've done, and people talk about different gimmicks to remember to pray in the morning, is I put my cell phone, when I charge it at night, I put it underneath the bed, because that's the first thing I want anyways, check my cell phone, because news could have broken out between like 12 and 6. Something could have happened I need to know about, or a message from, who knows, some spam list, but I need to know. So I'm jumping for the phone, because that's where I get either distraction or, you know, gratification. And I found that putting it under the bed, so I pretty much have to go under the bed to get my phone, is a way to remind me it's time for me to pray, to start the day that way. And I've heard people talk about putting their keys underneath the bed or their shoes. But if I don't, a lot of times I find myself in the shower having a conversation where I'm disagreeing with somebody else. We're like actually having a debate, and I can feel the unpleasantness of that. And sometimes, by the grace of God, that's the moment. It's still early in the day. I can pause and say, whoa, what is my plan for the day? Clearly, my plan for the day is not to argue with Sam or Sally at work. And I can step back and say, God, can you help me? Can you show me what to do? And sometimes on a good day, I can nail the morning and I can nail the night. What I struggle the most with is in the middle of the day consulting God, because sometimes I feel like God can't get into the office building that I work in. So, you know, I don't know if it's God doesn't have a badge or it's like a God-free zone. But even if I nail it in the morning and I'm feeling spiritual and ideally in the car, I'll call another alcoholic or I listen to a speaker tape, I'm good before I break the plane of the building. But once I'm at work, it's all about self and ego. What am I gonna make? Are they gonna think I'm good enough, smart enough? Am I gonna make a mistake? Am I gonna win an argument? And then God is gone. And I find that between the morning and the night, when I'm really alone, there's nobody else around. And usually it's other people who cause me, when I feel anxiety or resentment, it's associated with other human beings. If there's no other humans around, I can do this a little bit. But in the middle of the day with a lot of other humans around, I struggle to even remember to breathe sometimes. I find myself thinking, wow, I don't think I've been breathing. I don't think I had a glass of water. I'm not sure I went to the bathroom. I mean, I'm zipping through the day on self-will. And so the greatest opportunity for me to really enrich my spiritual life and to feel more peace is to consult with God during the middle of the day when there's other stuff going on. And I've tried a lot of gimmicks and they don't really work. Sometimes me and my friends will text each other time to pray or who's in charge or something like that. But really the only thing that kind of works for me is feeling uncomfortable. When I start to feel the discomfort building, as a result of taking the steps, I have some peace in my life. Most of the major resentments have gone away. And so now when I have a resentment, it feels like something's jabbing me in the side. I don't feel good. And with the grace of God, sometimes when I feel that, I can pause, I can call somebody else, or I can pray. But if I don't feel that discomfort, the discomfort is what brings me back to God during the middle of the day. That's what I got.
Thanks. The third reading is on page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
So I feel like a little bit, I probably touched on some of this in my last share. Asking God, I ask him every morning to remove my character defects that keep me from being of help to other people. So, and I do, think about that throughout the day. I've never been one that have really prayed for things for myself. I feel like I somehow, even as a little kid, I was taught, you pray for other people, or you pray kind of, how you could be good to other people, or, that type of thing. So, there'll be people in the rooms where I hear, they said, oh yeah, I was with foxhole prayer, get me out of this, bargaining with God, or, asking the Janis Joplin, bring me Mercedes-Benz kind of thing. I never prayed for anything like that. So, but I can see how that wouldn't work. Freedom from self-will, that's kind of my whole thing. Like I said, self-will run riot, and just sort of me trying to fix everything. And it's not like I'm necessarily trying to fix it for my betterment always, or what I think is going to be best for me. It's more like I just like to get in there and get involved in everything and fix everybody. And bring somebody a TCC handbook because they need to go to college, or I don't know what's best for people, and that's what I need to remember. Like, I need to just stay out of it. And the more that I kind of stay out of things and mind my own business and let things unfold how they're supposed to, the better everybody is. Because as we all know, we don't really want other people's opinions, even as alcoholics. We were reading in my home group today, the ninth tradition, and about, basically how AA can't tell us, anything that we're supposed to do. Like, we can make suggestions, and they were talking about how the line that GSO will put in letters, like, of course you're at perfect liberty to make whatever decision that you want. Mm-hmm. However, experience and, whatever dictates, or this might be a great idea, that type of thing. I don't know the exact language. But I was laughing to myself because all of us came back around to that. We didn't talk so much as it affected AA as a whole, but how some of those nuggets in that tradition related to our own lives. And that's how it is with me. Like, I don't want anybody to tell me what to do, and I want to do everything myself and kind of run the show, but I want to run your life too. So AA has definitely taught me that that doesn't work. You know, so that's what I can easily see why that doesn't work, you know. I'll keep that one brief because I might ramble on another one. And I keep passing that to you. You don't need it. Sorry.
So we're talking now about how to pray, and I did not have a relationship with God when I came to AA. I didn't have any experience praying. I'm not sure I believed that prayer was going to work. I think I probably prayed wrong when I did. It was mostly a foxhole prayer. God, help me get out of this situation. But when I talk about it took me 8 years to get sober, part of that was because it wasn't really a spiritual program for me. It was more of an educational program. I was going to figure this thing out. I was going to learn. There were some concepts I needed. And it wasn't until I really surrendered to a power greater than myself that I started to get this thing and it started to work for me. But even then, I didn't really believe. So I had to learn to believe basically by the miracle happening in my life and seeing the miracle happening in everybody else's life. And so when we talk about, you know, how to pray to God, I really started with just a willingness to believe that God might help me. Actually, I started believing God wouldn't help me, and that's probably why this didn't work for me for a long time. I was just convinced either God didn't exist or God wouldn't help me. And part of that's because in my childhood some things happened that I didn't think should have happened, and I just wasn't a believer. And what I was convinced to do here to start to pray was to just be willing to believe in a power greater than myself and then get into action. And so what happens to me is I do have a little bit of willingness when I get here just because I'm so desperate and I need this to work. And then I get into action and I start doing these things. I start cleaning up my past. I start living a different way. I'm sober a day, a week, a month, a year, years, and now I believe in God. Now I believe in prayer, and I see the miracles happening around me. And now when I pray, I really don't pray for myself. I have made a lot of foxhole prayers, but I found that the prayer that works for me is there's actually a prayer that's in the in another fellowship in the third step prayer. It's basically just, God, guide me, show me how to live, guide me in recovery. And it's like the third step prayer for us, you know, take away my difficulties so I can be helpful to others. I spent so much time, I remember just praying in the morning, God, help me stop drinking. And it never really worked for me. And when my prayers became, God, just show me how to live, and then my life changed. That's a prayer that really works for me whenever I'm in a pinch. God, just show me what to do. What do you want me to do? And I find that when I need to read a prayer, the St. Francis prayer does that for me. That's the prayer that gets me into praying for others, praying to be helpful. It starts with all the selfish things that I want and then tells me, no, pray for the other things. And I need that, so because I want you to understand me, but really I need to try to understand other people. I definitely want you to forgive me, but really I need to forgive other people and console other people. And so I needed a lot of help to learn how to pray, but when it changes from God help me to God show me, is when I start to feel the power that helps me live.
Thank you. All right, our next reading is also on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
So I've shared a little bit about my kind of religious, non-religious background. My family doesn't really have any interest in joining me in any kind of spiritual, whatever, experience. My husband and had Catholicism kind of shoved down his throat, and he has really bad taste in his mouth. And you know, when we kind of got married. I mean, I knew what I was marrying, so it's okay. Like, I knew I would be practicing and walking this kind of spiritual life myself, and we're just better off if we don't talk about any kind of religious thing, and even spiritual thing, because I'm not hardcore Catholic or anything, but we just kind of are better if we don't talk about it now. I have kind of, so my daughter, who's now three, since she was 6 weeks old, basically, I've been taking her to church with me, and it's cute to see her, and I'm not trying to shove it down her throat because I don't want my husband to think, oh, you're just trying to create this little Catholic baby, you know, and we didn't get her baptized and all this stuff. But I just, you know, one of my girlfriends said, like, you won't even have to do anything like that because you're going to model behavior. You're just going to show her, and you're not some hardcore, you know, this is a rule and that kind of thing, and so probably she won't be that way, but you can kind of give her an experience through what you're doing. And so when I get on my knees to pray, I mean, she's walking around the hallway doing whatever. I don't hide, but I don't be like, I'm praying right now. But I just do it like I would normally. And so she's like, Mommy, I'm going to go to my room and pray too. And so she sees me, and I just get like a little tear. And then my extra prayer that morning is, thank you, God, for like this beautiful daughter in my life. And, you know, I just feel so grateful. You know, when any kind of classical song will come on the radio and just say, Mommy, this is a church song, you know. And so I don't mean to turn anybody off by church talk, I'm sorry, because this isn't a religious program. But I did, you know, when we talk about, like, and I, you know, I heard the phrase, my mom is in recovery, and I had heard the phrase through her, or my first stepdad. I have another, he passed, I have another stepdad now who's also in recovery, both of them were, thank God. But I think it was one of them that taught me the phrase, take what you like and leave the rest. And it was more about the program, but I use that with my religious experience. Like, I go to church and I take what I like, leave the rest. And some people are like, how can you go to Catholic church? Oh, they're horrible. And I'm like, because there are a lot of things about it that I like. And so, and I use, like, I adopt things from them that are nice and helpful to me. And I feel a spiritual connection when I'm there. And, you know, and I do some of the stuff, you know, that is suggested through, you know, my religious denomination. But yeah, so my family's aside from it, and I will tell you that there have been times in my married life, and even before that when I was single and stuff, and I would see families at church, and I just, like, get sad, and I'm like, I'm never gonna have a husband that'll go to church with me. This is before I was married, and then I married somebody that I knew wouldn't go to church with me, so I did it to myself. But I get sad about that sometimes, you know. I take responsibility, but I do sort of pine for that. But I look at these families and I'm like, and I think, like, I'm having my own experience. One, the grass is not always greener on the other side. That man could be kicking and screaming. They could be, like, stabbing each other, you know, in the car on the way home. I mean, so it's not always as it appears. But I think, like, I have my own path, and this is me. Like, we ultimately, not to sound too morbid, but we walk this life alone, really. It's us and our higher power. And so I can't rely on my spouse to create this, like, spiritual religious life that I think I need, or anybody for that matter, my priest or my church or whatever. Like, it's me and God, you know, like my kids and my husband and all you people. Like, we're all have the potential to, like, be gone from each other. Like, we're not, you know, we have to have a good connection with our higher power. Like, I can't rely on you guys to feel good about my spiritual life any more than I can rely on my husband. And so I, you know, that's kind of been a good thing. Maybe it's made me be more reliant on my higher power because I don't have some, like, spiritual giant at home who I'm using as my God, which I've done with boyfriends that I've had in the past who do have a good connection. I've made them my higher power, you know, or so I don't have to worry about that. And I do think about where religious people are right, and I'll share one more thing that kind of relates to my daughter. My 3-year-old had been going to the GCC, and, you know, kind of from infant up until just last year, it's a 2-year-old classroom, and in her classroom they were doing a lot of Jewish stuff and all that, and it was just like, I thought it was really neat to learn about another religion, and kind of, you know, I feel like I learned a lot and kind of incorporated some of their thoughts, and, you know, I don't want to say blessings, but just kind of, it just opened my mind a little bit more to some religious experiences, and anyway, that's all I have. Go ahead, Jason.
I really don't care which religion a prayer came from, and I find any prayer that was written thoughtfully by people trying to connect into a spiritual life or connect with other people, chances are, if it's been around for a long time, it works well for a lot of people. And I was raised Jewish in the Jewish faith, and I know a bunch of Jewish prayers, but when I was at my bottom and I was really surrendering, I would say any prayer that I could remember, and I would say them over and over and over again. And as I mentioned, I didn't have a relationship with God. I didn't know how to pray when I got in here, but I did know that my life had come completely unglued when I reached the bottom. I was losing everything. I was losing my job, my profession, my family. And so, and when I surrendered, I was living with a lot of anxiety because I had legal charges. I didn't know what was going to happen. I felt the anxiety that usually makes me drink or leads me to drink. And people said, pray. Why don't you pray? That's the first suggestion. That's a suggestion that I would give to a new person also. But sometimes I wonder, you know, how does that sound to the new person? Just pray when you have a problem. And I can relate my own experience, which is I was so scared about what was going to happen. Was I going to spend a lot of time in jail? Was I going to be able to see my kids again? Was I going to lose my job? How would I support my family? I'm trying to think of solutions to all these things because that's how I live my life. I like to try to solve problems with my mind. And I just reached the ultimate failure. I'm just at failure. I have no ideas. I can't even think of a scenario. And so people tell me to pray. And so what I start doing is I start reciting any prayer I can think of. And sometimes I'll recite them in a row, different prayers, and over and over and over again. So I'll say the Our Father. I'm not Christian. I'll say a Jewish prayer. I'll say the third step prayer. I'll say the St. Francis prayer, the Serenity prayer, any prayer that I can think of that I can remember. And I'd say it over and over and over again. And I remember that first feeling that I started to feel a little bit better. And I don't know that God was reaching down and touching me and giving me relief necessarily because I was praying, but I know that I stopped obsessing, at least for a moment, about the stuff I was obsessing about. And I started thinking a little bit about other people and the bigger context. And so even though I wasn't even sure what some of the words meant, and they were different faiths that I had not practiced or adopted, just saying prayers over and over again, it started to work. And that's where it begins to click with me that there is something going on here, and that I don't need to have magic words to pray, and I don't need to be saintly to pray, but I need to stop thinking about myself and try to center on something, a power greater than myself, and any of these prayers will work. And so at this point, I'll take anybody's prayer. Anybody's got a good prayer that's working, I'll take it, because I just want to stop thinking about myself.
The next reading is also on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does.
Well, this is all what I've been talking about this whole time. But not just "Thy will be done," but I say "Thy will not mine be done." "Thy will not mine be done" throughout the day. I don't know, you know, I love it, you know, we're in much less danger of excitement. Like, excitement is dangerous, fear is dangerous, anger is dangerous. But I do find that I don't tire so easily. I know, like I've told you guys, I've admitted, you know, I try to run the show, I'm trying to run people's lives, but I don't do it as much as I used to. It is exhausting. It's enough just to try to, you know, keep my own stuff together. But I do ask God, you know, when I get agitated, I mean, that is something that is kind of ingrained. Like, I will kind of pause, take a deep breath, like, you know, "God, show me what to do, you know, remove my fear from me, you know, thy will not mine be done, thy will not be done." And, but these feelings, this excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, foolish decisions, like, that still comes into play. And this is just, like, a very small thing, but it caught me, like, it just struck me. I've been thinking about it a lot these last few days. We were going to Busch Gardens on Saturday. We'd gotten free tickets, and we're going up there, and, you know, have this whole plan arranged. And I'm driving, and I'm trying to be safe and everything. My husband hates it if I look at my phone or get chapstick out of my bag. He'll be like, here, I'll get it, you know, that kind of thing. And but the thought occurred to me when we were driving, we're more than halfway to Williamsburg, and I said, did I put the tickets in my bag? And I just got like so, all of a sudden, so full of fear. And I'm sitting here and I'm sitting with it for a second. I don't even want to blurt it out. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to alarm him. I don't want to, you know, and my first thing is like, fix it, fix it. How could I fix it? You know, like, what am I going to say to him so he's not mad at me? How are we going to fix it? Oh, we'll just buy the tickets. Oh, it's not a big deal. We can afford it. Blah, blah, blah. You know, all these things are going through my head. And then in this, with literally, and it's so silly. I don't know if y'all can relate to this. I'm sorry. I have this like elephant on my chest. My chest is so tight. And I'm like, take a deep breath. And I'm like, God, you know, and I'm like, that's the answer. I'm so like, okay, you know, help me, help, guide me. What would we do? Remove this anxiety from me. Just in my head. Like, I'm not telling anybody I'm praying. I'm just seeing it. You can pray to yourself. You can pray quiet. You know, not to yourself. Pray to God in your head. And it just like, and all of a sudden, I was like, I still had the lungs. I took a couple more deep breaths, and I'm like, I'm sure they're there. I put them there. If not, we'll buy them at the gate. And I didn't even think about it anymore. And so we're rolling around, and then we get there, and I'm like, oh, grab this. And I pull them out and go, here, keep these, honey. And I don't even tell him that I freaked out and, you know, whatever, you know, because then, but it's just like, it was neat. Like, it works. It really does, you know. It works. It really does. I mean, look, I wasn't trying to quote that, but it does. I did. It really does work. And it was neat for me to see that, because that was a small thing. I mean, there's bigger things throughout the day. I mean, you have a major accident or you run over somebody's foot. I mean, clearly there's things that are much worse than thinking that you forgot your Free Bush Gardens tickets at home, clearly. But it reminded me, like, of course I have worse things that happen throughout the day or through the month or through the year, but I need to remember, like, that was God showing me, like, it works, it really does. Here's a little tiny example of something kind of silly, but like, practice this, do this, remember this, you know, because it's a good tool. And I don't have to live in that excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, you know. I don't have to beat myself up, or, you know, it's just like, rely on God, trust God, like, it's all going to work out, you know? So, that's it.
Pause when agitated is, it's not my natural reaction when I'm agitated. When my adrenaline starts going, I'm thinking about moving much faster. And that's my default mode. I mean, I like to move fast anyways, because I like to make decisions and go do it. And I don't really, when I pause, there's a chance I can't do what my first impulse is. And so getting to a place where I pause when agitated, as opposed to running around like a chicken with my head cut off when I'm agitated, it's a big change. I mean, it's part of changing the way I experience life, because I'm always thinking about, what do I expect to have happen? What do I want to have happen? What do I do to make happen what I want to have happen? And I make a lot of bad decisions in that mode. When I pause, the decisions are always better, if I can just get to the point where I can slow down a little bit. Because when I pause, I give myself will a chance to settle down a little bit, a chance for God to come into the room to consult with God. Because I don't always consult with God when I have decisions to make. But the best decisions I make are always ones where I consult with God. And so, how do I pause? How do I get into a habit of actually slowing things down? The slower they are, the better decisions I make, the better chance I have I can either talk to somebody, or I can pray, or I can listen to God, or my impulse will die down. But it's not really where I want to go. It's, I want to fight, I want to control, and I make things worse. And so in this journey in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm trying to live a different way, to have a different experience. Pausing is a big change for me, but I found that every decision I make when I take my time is a much better decision than when I rush ahead. And so I need to pause when agitated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Final reading is on page 88. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
I'm so glad that my home group read Tradition 9 today, because one of the lines was that, I don't know if it was great or just great love and great, you know, it was like love and alcohol are great disciplinarians or something like that. And so I was thinking about that, disciplinarians, when we say discipline, and in coming into AA, alcohol was definitely my disciplinarian. Like, alcohol disciplined me. Alcohol was the thing that drove me here and kind of beat me down into this state of reasonableness. And then I think I didn't have a lot of people telling me, like, God is wrathful and all this kind of stuff, but I did somehow pick up on a little bit of that when I was growing up. But then, you know, now I think God is love. And so I think that, like, AA and love, you know, help me be disciplined. And, you know, through God, like, these actions kind of give my life and my day an outline, you know, and it kind of helps me know, you know, what's the script? What am I supposed to be doing? So, like, I have my plan. You know, people will talk about, like, I wasn't born with an instruction manual, but then I came to AA, and this book is, you know, as good as what I've ever seen, or, you know, something like that. Like, I definitely feel that way, as cheesy as that might sound. Like, I feel like if I'm doing what's in the book, like, I have a pretty good blueprint for success. And you know, taking action and, you know, where it says, you know, the next chapter is devoted to step 12. I mean, I think about working with people and being active in home group and all that kind of stuff. I had to switch home groups because of sort of family situation and all that. And I kind of did it begrudgingly, and, you know, and now, like, I like it. I mean, I can't say I love it. Like, I loved my sort of first and, you know, my first love home group, but, like, I like it, and people there like me, and I'm of service to them, and I'm learning a lot, and from other people that I wouldn't maybe have been exposed to. But yeah, this program has definitely kind of given me a new life. And I don't think that when I came in here, I thought that alcohol was what was ruining my life. I thought, you take the alcohol away, everything's going to be all peachy keen. It wasn't. I'm the same wreck of a person as I was, with all the same character defects, and even doing the same sick things in recovery as I was doing when I was sober, which I'm like, that doesn't make sense, you know, because I'm not drinking. So why am I still putting myself in these situations? You know, like, that was insane to me. I wasn't living a spiritual life. I didn't have a higher relationship with a higher power. I hadn't taken the steps. I hadn't done the work. You know, a year and a half, just more miserable than I was when I came in day one. You know, some things had gotten better, but basically I was, you know, broken still. And so, yeah, this, the pain and alcohol are what, you know, was got, you know, helped me. And now I think, like, still pain is my disciplinarian, because I wait, not as long as I used to, but I wait till I'm in pain, till I'm ready to take action, you know, until I'm really ready to do something different. And that's okay, you know, maybe if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But I don't know. I love this program. I'm glad I got the chance to come to my old, you know, Ghent stomping grounds and see all you people. So thanks for inviting me.
Right. I've tried a program of thinking, and I've tried a program of action, and the program of thinking did not help me. And when I came into AA, alcohol was ruining my life, and thinking about recovery and talking about recovery did not help me. But the program of action saved my life. And when the book calls us to action and more action, that's when I think about, now I just want to stay here. I don't want to graduate. I'm not here just for a visit. I want to stay in the middle of AA for the rest of my life. And 10, 11, 12, the maintenance steps, the action steps, is how I stay here. And so I'm just very grateful to be in AA. Thank you.
Can we have a hand for Ashley and Jason? All right, that's great. We will now pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of the AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Grant.
So this coming Saturday at St. Timothy's Church on Kempsville Road, there's an event for professionals to come and learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and what we do for the suffering alcoholic. If you know any professional people who come across alcoholics on a regular basis, come see me after the meeting. I can either email you a copy of the flyer. There's also a copy of the flyer over there on the table. It's from noon to 4, again, this coming Saturday. Also in that regard, it's being hosted by CPC, which is a cooperation of the professional community and in public information. If you want to get involved in some service, both of those groups could use our support. CPC meets the first Thursday of every month, and PI meets the third Tuesday of every month, the intergroup. So also if you want to get involved, come see me after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Grant.
I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Ashley.
And my home group has their 36th anniversary eating meeting. We meet Mondays at 10:30 at Bayside Presbyterian Church on the corner of Independence and Yule. We'll have the meeting from 10:30 to 11:30. We'll end a little early, and then we'll have lunch. And if you want to bring a dish, feel free. If not, just come and eat and hang out. It's a really great meeting. I just miss my people that I like grew up with in AA. So it is one of the best home groups in Tidewater. So please come.
Thank you, Ashley. Does anybody else have any announcements? Victoria?
Hi, Victoria.
Hey, Victoria.
October 28th.
Thank you. Anybody else? I have an announcement. This home group, Simple Actions, we're having supper and a speaker next month on Monday, October 16th, 2017. At 6 p.m., we'll have a potluck. Bring a dish if you can. And at 7 p.m., Billy H. from Madison, Virginia, will be sharing his story. So we would love to have you guys, if you can't remember all that, grab an orange flyer from our literature table. Anybody else? Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Could I get home group members to raise their hands? Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you.
I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Ben. Welcome.
Awesome. There's a literature table over there. The books are for purchase at cost, and anything you can fold is free. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you like to purchase a book. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, which is simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel one more time? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 11 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd. And I forgot, somebody had left a cell phone in the women's bathroom, and I think Stephanie took it, and she left it with Bill, the doorman. Okay, great. And can I have a volunteer, Dave, to read the last
one? Alcoholic David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer.
Temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,